to vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother. Rap on.
Yeah, welcome back to Punkonomics, your weekend discussion show that talks about everything and then a little bit more. All right, so we were discussing several things.
Well, I have a segue, actually. I was waiting to ask, so I think I just go ahead. We said we won't talk about the national election, and I do still think that it's very important, the local, but I was reposting this article the other day on punkonomics.org, and there was, you know, this argument that came out of it. The article, again, it's over up there. I don't remember who wrote it anymore. About how Donald Trump is the best thing that happened to American democracy in many, many years. Wait, hold on. Hold on there for a second. Why? The crux of the idea is that he's fanning the flames, that he's messing things up, he's exposing some very nasty, smelly, deep truths that are alive and well. You know, racism comes to mind, sexism comes to mind, a lot of other things could come to mind. But he's doing a kind of somewhat of a traditional populist kind of, a turn of the century move. In that sense, you could say that Bernie Sanders is doing the same thing with a very different style, very different people, obviously. But in a sense, if Trump gets elected, could it happen? I'm crazy. Don't get me wrong. I didn't mean to lure you into the studio. I literally think maybe it would have been, it's not a bad thing. I wish it had happened actually years before. I alienated all my liberal friends when I said, I think Romney would have been better if he had won, because he would have guided the country if he'd applied what he was even semi-promising he would do, the Ryan plan. He would have driven America down the drain at an accelerated rate. But at least people would not be able to blame, you know, the Muslim socialist in the White House. I'm joking here, of course. Yeah. You know, it's ridiculous. Then it'll be, oh, maybe these kind of hyper-conservative, if that's the word, austerity-driven, only the interests of the very wealthy at the expense of everybody else, policies that tragically both parties are at the national level barely distinguishable. At least it would expose it. The outrage would flow out a better. That's what I'm concerned with. Now, again, I'm not shy. I know I have a funny view of things and maybe I'm wrong, but I think what you guys are talking about, it's important that rational, progressive, or even the libertarian rationals, right? The non-Chamber of Commerce libertarians, the real ones, if you will. Not the stooges. There's plenty of stooges on the center left or whatever you want to call the Democratic Party today. Yeah. Is more to the right than the Republicans were under Reagan, in terms of economic policy. Yeah. I mean, what people jokingly but accurately say that the last liberal president America had was Richard Nixon. Factually, it's kind of true. It's sad and tragic. At any rate, the idea is that feed off the same energy, redirect. I think people like you, rational, concerned with the interests of the American people, its economy, its
everybody,
future, should be not shy to feed off this anger, maybe re-divert some of the misguided anger of, you know, like Tea Partiers, right? Who end up voting and supporting the very same people that have been screwing them over for years that even started that whole anger of the Tea Party. I'm talking about the other side, if you will. Do we not need that to push back? I'm concerned with the reasonableness of the reasonable left. That has little chance to stop the feeding of the feeling of frustration, justifiable frustration, anger that very sadly and tragically gets diverted into blaming foreigners and women and you name it, right?
So it's funny because while we were talking earlier and you were talking about local rules going away and we could try to write this in and write
that's
that
state
in.
State rights.
In this legislation, in the fracking legislation.
Not excuses fracking for racism. Like state rights has been reduced recently to excuses for old school racism, right? But that's real state rights issue, right?
So then all of a sudden, if let's say this stuff starts moving and we're going down this path and we see it on a state level, national level, international level, we've lost our control. Well, then all of a sudden you've got all the libertarians that are a voice that no longer has anything to argue for. And then you've got another group, you know, that's what hit me right then is where does their argument stand from when once that starts to play out? And go ahead.
You know, it's the that paragraph in that about taking away the municipalities and counties and cities rights. If this passes with that language in it, they can copy and paste this into another bill and just take out oil and use it for anything. You know, so, you know, whether it doesn't even have to be environmental. It doesn't have to be the plastic bags. It doesn't have to be fertilizer. Absolutely. It could be certain things that, you know, right now the fracking is not it doesn't fall under the guidelines for the Clean Water and Clean Air Act. You know, and you wonder
why.
Yeah. Well, I know why. It was because Cheney wrote the script and everybody signed off on the energy policy. But it scares me. Like what we're saying is that, you know, if you start stripping it on this bill, if this passes, and then you just start adding this to another thing and another thing. And so then our voices are getting squashed on a local level where only now even fewer people, are deciding.
Yeah, that's the real tyrannical stuff that's going on.
I mean, like, some extent, if you think about what Benny was talking about, I think that one of the main aspects is that, to some extent, the Tea Party type, or like libertarians from the right and stuff like that, managed to, at some point, if you think about it, have like a very decent representation within the system that regulates them, right? We call this in a macro, like regulatory capture, right? And that's a creepy...
Well, those are the quote-unquote Chamber of Commerce libertarians.
Chamber of Commerce libertarians, right? Like, but they are represented. And my question is, what does it take at that level within that framework of government already being captured? How do you recapture back so that communities can have clean water? Mm-hmm. So that what does it take? I think that a buzzword that I hear a lot in this conversation is voice, right? Mm-hmm. You need voice. You need people yelling out, right? And perhaps what Ben is arguing is, hey, maybe if we elect Donald Trump, people will be angry enough not to just voice their concerns, but to yell them out perhaps in a punk song. You
I'm
know
drawing
I mean?
Straws here, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, but the idea is,
how much are you going to do in 4 years?
Yeah.
And I mean...
Might be too late. But yeah. You know, but sometimes
by then... the last nail in the coffin, if you will.
And I'm not a fan of Donald Trump. I'm not a fan of any of them. But the thing is, when I go to meetings and I see people walking away from the tables because of party conflicts.
Oh, yes, I know.
These are the TPP meetings, the Common Core meetings. Those are the people that Donald Trump is talking to with the emotional stuff right now. He has stood up against those things. But nobody else is addressing
them. It always wins
them.
In politics, though. So
it
I'm
always
saying
wins.
The
it's
left
tricky.
Needs to recapture the populism,
the strategy.
The people.
All right, so we have a caller.
Hey, caller.
Hi, how y'all doing? I've heard you many times on air. I don't know your name.
No,
I really enjoy your show.
Cool.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. I'm Jesse Velez. I'm the co-host of the slave of the show. No, right. Just joking. Benjamin Alex, he's the host.
All right.
And we also have several guests. We have Jose, which is one of our usual consultants here.
Yeah, hello. Jose Galvez here.
And Eric Rollins.
And Carolina.
Okay. Hello.
With the Light Brigade.
There you go, Light Brigade.
Awesome. Well, real quick, I wanted to add my 2 cents. I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 27. I went to UCF, and I think it's really funny that you guys are from Rawlins, and, you know, which is supposed to be a real liberal school talking about libertarian ideas. I really appreciate that, and I think our generation is a little bit different than the ones before. That being said, I'm a libertarian, I'd say. I was a big Ron Paul guy. I do like his son, and I just wanted to comment on that real quick. I think that out of all the contenders, he's the only one, really, that has, I think, our generation's vote, and I want to see what you guys have to say about that. That
I personally don't know.
Donald Trump, to me, just kind of comes off as kind of a pretender, kind of like how he was in that show that he had, The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. So that's all I have to say, so I'll get off the phone now. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you for calling.
Absolutely.
And excellent. I like that he brings that up because when Donald Trump starts going China, yeah. Then all of a sudden they can talk about, oh, we need TPP to protect ourselves economically, yeah. But like,
totally divorced from any kind of reality from the start to the, I mean, you know, you can get more realistic economy from watching, you know, I don't know what, cartoons, really. In fact, there have been some studies that if you follow the network news on the economy, they did actually quizzes pre-post, they did a whole series of that. Well, anyway, when you watch network television, mm-hmm. or cable, right, mainstream media, you know less about the economy, not just about the nuances of it, just straight up facts. You get confused. That's the one of the effects of brainwashing, you know. It causes kind of damage to your mind, at least in a period of time. Let's all stab at it. I mean, I got to say that I'm a little, he had his moments. I hope that Luther heard our cool interview with Wiley here. We had a very good discussion, actually. A really nice talk before the election. Got 3%. You can't go alone, I should say. I've half jokingly and for many years, and everybody keeps rolling their eyes at me, but I'm used to it. I thrive on people not taking me seriously. You have to have a socialist and a libertarian together. You know, now, when I said Trump is a real, you know, in history you think of different kind of characters, but he's capturing the frustration of a lot of Americans, of the right more, with this. Somebody like, I don't know, you know, Rand Paul, other than the baggage that he must carry for his name, and I always like to, you know, feel his pain for that one. You know, it's a pretty heavy name to carry. He did some nice things like the filibuster on, his famous filibuster, but I think he's certainly compromising at this point, of course, but you have to, Bernie Sanders doing the same thing. You have to compromise to even be allowed into the game. And then what? You say potentially all the right things like President Obama did and then don't do any of them, right? In fact, go the other way on, you know, accelerate mode. Don't even start me on Clinton, whose record, the only thing, good thing I got to say about her, that she's female. That's it. I know. Equal opportunity hate is our motto here. But once again, a single candidate, even if the most well-meaning and just pretending to be an idiot in order to get elected, even with the best intentions, will probably not be able to do what they intend to do. Because the system is quite rotten quite deeply, dysfunctional, both economic and political, and we need them both at least semi-functional. So I don't hold much hope, like I said, for anything. But when people raise stuff and make people angry and people are talking about inequality for the first time in 30 years or more about the environment, trying to break through that propaganda veil, that's productive. Whoever ends up getting nominated or elected is, in my view, secondary.
You know, Donald Trump, to me, though, he's inflammatory. Mm. He's pouring gasoline on a fire, sure. And he's going for that, it's to the borderline of almost like hate speech to me.
Yeah.
Some
of it has been.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, considered
when you look about immigration.
The victims, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how far does that push to where if your rhetoric becomes more and more and more intense, when does it come out where people aren't voting, but they're actually acting mm-hmm. on things, in if they act out in violence, or if they start doing,
I mean, crime is still going, it's still not rising again, though almost surprising given the recession.
Our society is
falling apart with this divisiveness and hatred eating us, you know?
Well, and I just think that the more that Donald Trump is to have the center stage, and if I just hope that he realizes that the more power that he is rallying, if you will want to say that, that it's done in a responsible way, because right now the way that every time I hear him speak, it seems like it's taking another step down and another step down. And then when are people are going to start reacting in a...
They are. They're swarming to him because the lower...
No, I mean in a physical way, in a physical way to where they start taking it out on immigrants, or they start taking it out, you know, that this is going to, the possibility...
The frenzy. The building frenzy.
No, I hear you. Your condemnation is so important, and absolutely. I mean, there's nothing, you know, you can't stop. We could dedicate all the time for this.
My problem
is that the other candidates use bigger, you know, are stylistically different, but they feed the machine more effectively than he is.
I see him as the circus show on the side. Yeah,
right.
He's the entertainment because he keeps bringing up immigration, China.
Yeah,
and that.
But for me
as a purist, then just talk about TPP. We need to, you know, like, get me in there so I can stop this that will reverse everything.
That he won't
everything.
Do because he's just as corrupt as the others.
Exactly.
You know, right. Because he's fake. He's not a real populist.
So he's
he
part of the show.
But he's eating all the, he's feeding on the frustration. People are voting for them because they're confused. They know they're unemployed and he's telling us it's a Chinese fault. Oh, wonderful. It's an old ploy, right? Somebody who looks a little bit different than me is responsible. Easy, all these things, right? So, the only way I think to break that the rhetoric of the mainstream parties is correctly unpersuasive the majority of people, and they fall victims to his demagogy.
But here's the thing. I mean, most people, at least the American public, has been desensitized by our politics and all that. But what people don't understand, everybody's going like, oh, Donald Trump, he's the big monster and all that. But what about the Republican Party? They're basically using Donald Trump to put in their little candidate. I mean, it's kind of like a political jujitsu. You identify the boogeyman, and then when you wind up kicking them out, then the Republican left standing, that's the one that everybody's going to vote. Because, I mean, let's face it, even on immigration, I mean, I don't know about everybody here, but I identify most immigrants, particularly like Latin cultures, to side with the Republican Party. I don't know why, but that is the truth. So a lot of your well-to-do Republicans vote with Jeb Bush.
Because they'll say,
okay, well, we got rid of the crazy man. Now we have somebody who's safe. But what they don't understand is that Jeb Bush or whoever it is that's going to be the person they're going to nominate is just as crazy or restrictive or corrupt as Donald Trump. I mean, basically, I feel that Donald Trump is being a little bit more honest with the way he believed, you know,
look at him as a phenomenon. I'm obviously not supporting him, not even looking in that direction.
But you got to give him credit. I mean, the strategy is good, you know, and who knows? Maybe they got together and were like, okay, Donald, take the bullet for everybody else. So in the background, we'll give you all these little benefits.
Well, you know, he did have that meeting with the Republican National Chairman to discuss that if he's not the nominee, to make the promise that he won't go as an independent.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's a strategy. They sit behind closed doors and they laugh at us because it's one big play that they're doing on the American public.
Well, you know, I would love to be sitting having a beer in Belgium or having some wine in France or something, watching with the locals the Republican debate and see what they have to say, because it has got to be incredibly embarrassing. Like, I mean, they've just got to be shaking their head that the United States, the political system has now become a reality show.
No, wait a minute. I'd like to remind people in Europe, the Tea Party, you know, like Scott Walker has been in power in Europe for about 10 years now.
Western Europe is lost. They
have some structures that they cannot remove without causing riots, like healthcare, and they can't like abandon everything. But the push has been very hard, and the political elites, once again, you know, the socialists in France are just as conservative as the Democrats in America, and same Britain, of course, you know, though things are reversing. You got a populist, a left populist. It's like Bernie Sanders won in Britain, if you will, right? We'll see. And I think that's great, too. I'm not too concerned with, you know, will he win? How can he win? Will he deliver? Look at all the embarrassing compromises he's already have made. Fine, you know, that's the game he's playing. But he is raising issues. People are talking.
It takes a while to get change. This election will not make a difference. Maybe next one.
And to some extent, it's somewhat difficult in the sense of, like, Jesse, for example, mentions, yeah, you have all this very incendiary rhetoric from Trump about immigration, but then you look at Obama's record on deportation, right? And it's, you realize, oh, it's not that different, actually.
Right, like, right.
I mean, he
in
needs...
Fact, maybe
of course, I do have to say that most people would direct their anger at Obama, but what a lot of people don't understand is that there's not a kingdom of a, you know, monarchy. Congress has a lot to do with passing.
That's true. That's
so
true.
So, I mean, you know, one person cannot do it. I keep saying over and over again, you know, forget Obama. He's just a picture on the wall.
Yeah.
Let's crack down on the people that actually sign these bills.
He just quitted. He resigned 2 days, one day.
Oh, Boehner.
No, yeah, no, he's about to resign, right? He announced he's resigned.
No, but where do you start? I mean, we don't, I mean, we should dedicate another time to you know, my favorite description of Obama's presidency, because I'm not talking about him personally. I don't know him, and it's not the issue. The more effective evil. And that's coming from a black socialist, Glenn Ford in Black Agenda Report, and I think he's got it bang on. And that's my reverse logic of why maybe let's let one of those fake capitalists, because that's not what capitalism is like, never was. This is actually dismantling capitalism. This is the real enemy of a market system, are these quote-unquote conservatives or fiscal conservatives in Europe or in America or anywhere else. So when you have somebody who's supposed to be a solution, he actually has the ability, or he just ends up doing in some ways worse again, because when foreign policy, whether it be foreign policy, economic policy, environmental policy, in many ways worse than any Republican before him. So yeah, Republicans made me do it, but I don't really enjoy that excuse. A bit weak. Yeah, maybe, you know, partially. Of course, that's part of how the system fails. But it didn't deliver. So pinning it on another, doing it again and again, isn't that a sign of insanity? The question is how to really change the way the system works. And just like developing countries, we're in a situation where the power is so unequal. And you know, some of my libertarian friends, you know, say, oh, worry about absolute poverty. Yeah, I see the point. Not so much about, right, if we could alleviate the bottom quarter of American population up significantly and a few people will become multi-trillionaires, all right, that's better than what we have right now.
Right, then we don't need all these programs. And that's like what I can see sometimes that as well, you know, I would rather not have to pay the taxes. I can see all those arguments in that, but then, you know, try to frack my land. Don't try to take away why I live here. You know, these things.
I actually think that a lot of the, you know, specific issues that somebody happens to be particularly attached to, I mean, go for it, you know, specialize, right? But support each other. You know how in so many groups, like you were saying before, everybody's like, oh, my cause is more important than yours, so I hate you. I mean, no, we're an inch away for crying out loud.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Well, you know, but things like reversing Citizens United, where it would be a more level playing ground, that would be a first big step. I think that if we look back in American history, 100 years from now, people are going to say, what was the Supreme Court thinking? Because, I mean, it's when you call a corporation a person and you can spend unlimited amount of money for influence and for basically buying off politicians, there's your problem right there. You make it worth it if you make their job so easy. As far as being, well, yeah, I mean, if you're getting millions of dollars to run unlimited ads, you know, it makes it a lot easier to run against an opponent that maybe has a grassroots base and is representing people that are actually people and not a corporation.
No, I mean, and these things are well understood, and it's not new. I mean, you're absolutely right to point out this. Again, this is a good rallying call, the Citizen United.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. If I had a button now and I'll press it, it's gone, it will be a good thing. But would it fundamentally change the depth of the corruption of our system? Probably not, because things are hard to be reversed also. The power has been spent. But, you know, we have to fight it. This is a very challenging fight. I mean, this is the core problem this country is facing. This is why this country has been declining for 35 years. This is it.
And it's overwhelming. I mean, I would love to do more for TPP and for the children in the public schools. But I'm so overwhelmed, you know, and then I appreciate what Eric can do as a representative and watch him and support him and learn from him. But then I'm not able to make the meetings. I'm not able to be there in the numbers with the signs like I would love to do. But we're all in these isolated boats from each other fighting. Mm-hmm. And yet we're up against the same wall. We're hitting the same wall of this coordinated effort of it's what we say and that's it. Mm-hmm. And that's why for us, we haven't backed off of TPP, because if TPP passes, and I keep forgetting to mention it, the former trade minister from Japan has come out and said, he has confirmed that we will be forced to change our laws to be in line with TPP. Yeah. So that came out in the last couple weeks, as well. I'm sorry, I forgot where I was going with that, but that's something I wanted to touch on. And when you talked about earlier about C-SPAN, that most folks don't have cable in that, I'm not sure if you all are aware, but in 2017, all public Florida school kids, they're pushing that they're going to be doing their homework online. They're not going to be sending home worksheets anymore. So now there's going to be a big push for getting online home access, or are we going to have a bunch of low-income parents at the libraries
Judging
to do
from
homework?
No, I wouldn't hold my breath. And frankly, again, I'm actually kind of an advocate in a sense. My research is on, you know, technologically education. The problem is that 80% of it is a racket. And that's a conservative measure.
Yeah.
Right.
So I find it actually professionally difficult because, you know, since I want to do it in a different way, well, I'm not alone here, right? But I have a resistance from my natural allies often, right? People who are concerned with the racket that so much of the technology and school reform, and it's a criminal racket.
When you say racket, are you saying like that the people, the students aren't benefiting, the people that are selling the computers? Is that?
No, actually, no one
likes it.
Like all decisions, I think pretty much every decision, there might be exceptions. Throughout economic, political decisions we're making, policy decisions we're making through and through, with very few exceptions, nobody's even doing the study.
Yeah.
Nobody. Well. there's no room where somebody is honestly sitting with educational experts and hashing out a way to reform our education for the 21st century. No. They're talking about how to harvest the bodies of our children for profit. I'm getting like,
I mean,
because this is a new economic model that has never seen before. Mm-hmm. Not under Stalin, not under Nebuchadnezzar, not under ancient tyrants or anybody. This is the first time. People were used historically as labor and soldiers, sometimes a little bit free, sometimes completely like animals on the farm, right? Full slavery, maybe different flavors. Maybe in the modern era, we move to be consumers, right? I mean, American workers were needed for 200 years, right? Or 400 years. Since they weren't enough, they kidnapped and enslaved and tortured millions of Africans, right? Later, though, there was need for American workers. American wages actually went up over the past 200 years. If they were white, yeah, you know, Chinese slaves too. I mean, a lot of caveats, obviously. But overall, there was need for more workers. Not that the workers weren't being crushed and forced to work with lower wages, but the struggle continued. We're reaching a point where our labor is not really necessary for those making decisions for the, as they called it in the 18th century, the quality. The 1%, whatever you want to call them, the people that really matter. And we don't even, we're not even really needed as consumers as we have in this transitional era of the last 20 years. The Americans at least were needed. We had to keep some kind of wages or income in their pockets, even if through debt, so that they buy stuff. This is over. What are we now? You know, the 99, the proverbial 99. I say the farm has changed dramatically. We're not being used to pull the plow anymore, or to be milked anymore. We are used for bacon.
And
that's the healthcare system,
right?
You know, and I include Obama in it, which had, you know, Obamacare had some improvement. I'll grant you that, but not even so little that barely bears mentioning.
Florida was the number one. Florida signed up more people for Obamacare than any.
Once again, it guts the middle class we get a worse deal than before. It maintains basically Obama, I think, went at least metaphorically to the health industry and more importantly the insurance industry, and said, "Listen, you heard all I promised. You know that all the experts know that this is what needs to be done. You're aware of all of this. What can you give me symbolically for PR that I can live with?"
I see PR because I was going to say.
I got to give something. I got to make something. I want to cover a few more children. I got to cover a few more poor people. But don't worry. I'll deliver the middle class and not the Republican debate middle class, you know, the real middle class.
Because, I mean, that is my background, employee benefits all the debate when I watched it, I've had marketplace coverage for about a decade now. Mm-hmm. So I've been in the marketplace that they, you know, I knew it was coming out. It got rolled out, you know, to the bigger companies and
states were allowed to block it.
So
right?
It was already written. It was on the books. Everyone was moving towards it with their systems and that. And so why would they invest all this money and then after 10 years of investments, oh, we're going to just roll it back. I mean, it was just a show. But the racket, you know, that's a good point with the kids, because in 2012, when I started getting concerned about what I was seeing with FCAT and that they had such bad scores that year, that they were basically all the third graders were going to have to get remediation or be held back.
Well, the exam is ludicrous completely. I mean, as well, you know.
Well, so there was this big push between Jeb Bush's foundation and Bill Gates Foundation to come together. They got PR talking points. Florida superintendent, he showed up here at, it was either Jones or Evans, you know, and they had these great talking points. I went to Sublet myself at a school board meeting and spoke about what I was seeing, because at that time the resolution that was going around against high stakes testing throughout the states, and it had started to hit counties here in Florida. So I go to talk to them and say, would Orange County, you know, consider it? And that was my thing. They're talking about this is going to raise the global, you know, put our kids out there for the global economy.
That's a complete lie.
I'm like, anybody knows that. But the global economy is a slavery economy. Well, so how does that really
help? It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, but it's being constructed like that. It doesn't have to be.
But now that I know about TPP, it was, you know, it was leading to all of that. Now here we are again this year. We've leased the test from Utah because the FCAT had to go away. Pearson wasn't ready to move forward with what they had. So we've leased this test, the air test from Utah. And here we are again that they're not happy with the scores. They're going to be suing this but investigating how it was assessed.
It's a parade of fools. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's really all like, we're moving our education system to copy, you know, the for-profit Phoenix School just got a $1.4 million in California. So some students won a lawsuit against one of these, but they're all a racket.
Right.
They're growing. They have a large lobby.
So just like in 2012, process. They couldn't grade the schools because they didn't have the data. Here we are again, 2015, and we don't have the data.
No serious people are sitting down to, okay, so what are we doing here? And again, you have things like Rahm Emanuel going to Chicago and gutting the public school system for profit, corporate raider. I mean, like really, better to say about it. You want to see the future of America? Look at Detroit. It's coming very soon.
Yep.
Or even Philadelphia. They've been closing record number of schools in the last couple of years, and the money they're taking away from the schools, they're building all these brand new private prisons.
Wait. Okay. I mean, you know, it goes so deep. I know. I mean, where do you even stop? But you have to separate. We have a failing public system. Our public system
this show's
is awful.
Only 2 hours.
Badly run and catastrophic, you know? So what am I now? Am I conservative saying that? I mean, frankly, sometimes I'm beginning to think that maybe it's true that there's like nothing to salvage except for the specific individual skills. And the way it's run is like, you know, Kafka on crack. But the solutions proposed are not well thought of at all, either to reform the public system or to help it or to create alternatives or whatever it is. Again, I have the advantage, despite being overall kind of, you know, left anarchist, to have Austrians, you know, and Austrian economists and libertarian friends. So when they, the honest ones, when they say, okay, 10 years ago already, I'm quoting somebody, we should go nameless, about, yeah, there's the public schooling system in America, probably nothing to salvage. Like, ditch it. Yeah, she says, I'm a libertarian, I want to privatize it, I want charter schools, but immediately, this is going to be extremely expensive. If you even want to have a chance without corruption, yeah, nice assumption there, right? A clean, well-run, with the best intentions and everything, privatization into some kind of charter schools or something like that, you'd have to basically fund every child in America, and this is 10-year-old gold number, with at least $10,000 to $15,000 a year. Then you might have a chance with proper oversight to make a big right-wing kind of conservative reform. Here's the racket. Nobody asks her to come and advise, despite being quite the expert, right? Now, we do this kind of cost-cutting, commercialization. If we don't convert the schools into actual prisons, we convert it into something pretty equivalent, quite frankly. Right.
In this last ESCA authorization that just happened a few months ago, they are taking funding away from kindergarten to 12. They are going to start funding for education for age 0 to 5. So now we're going to have in the daycares these companies with their...
Oh, yeah, in terms of... Right.
And you know, we need to assess these preschoolers so we
have them
ready.
So this is the way for the government to transfer our tax money to the private corporate buddies.
Should we say the government or should we say the corrupted portion of the government?
Of course. There are, you know, people fighting from within.
We got someone good here from the government that is fighting for us.
I'm used to everybody clumping everybody in together, but I don't take it personally.
There are
good people out there, that are representatives that are elected. But also, if they're not on the right side of, and I don't mean that in a conservative way or whatever, but a lot of times there's repercussions if they don't play along. If their bills won't get heard, and you vote the way that the leadership might want you to. I can't say that it happens all the time, and I'm certainly not a state representative in Tallahassee listening to all this, but some of the things you can see where corporations and that they didn't vote on an education bill because of ... And then all of a sudden, you know, there's another thing. So it goes into negotiating. Like we were talking about, you've got to be willing to negotiate. So this is such a huge, deep problem. And in education, I'm wondering if, when we're talking about fracking, we're talking about the environment. I wonder how much of their syllabus is spent on that, you know? On a sustainability, because if it is really easy to teach a child to grow vegetables and to do the right thing as far as recycling or reducing their carbon input, by the time that you're 30 or 40, that's like trying to teach old dog new tricks, you know?
Well, but in schools, often what happens is that because of the hierarchical kind of gulag structure with no basic human rights that the children have, that our schools... every time you go environmental, even my kids, who are really very conscious of this stuff, they'd like not recycle for a day every time there was a day in school. Because it really gives you a kind of a taste for, it's awful. It's just like the elementary school. Oh yeah, don't do drugs. I mean, oh really? I never thought about it, but now I'm considering it. Thank you very much. To me, as with my background in Eastern Europe and all, it sounds like, yeah, it sounds like the old place. It sounds like the Soviet Union in so many ways in that sense. And I'm a lefty. The problem is that we must have functional government. So the liberal fallacy, I believe, is saying, well, the government needs to take care of all of that. I agree. Let's import the Norwegian government and maybe they would. nobody's talking about these,
I want to interject here because, you know, that's a great thing. I was actually this week, we were walking past Princeton. That's where my kids were going. And, I have pulled them both out of homeschool. I had full intentions of leaving my second one through fifth grade. But with the changes last year, it was just too much. So I just suddenly pulled her. It was unexpected, unplanned for. But, they do have a spot at Princeton where they have a little garden. So the first graders, the second graders, they can go out and garden. And, but they have a lot of other open land.
Show them the film,
and it's like, I wish the third graders and the fourth graders and fifth, you know, that it could be every grade they get to experience that. But they don't have the time once they hit third grade. Recess is an option.
Right.
You know, you may or may not get a chance to go run outside 15 days or 15 minutes that day. You don't have time to go play in the garden for an hour and learn that higher level for your grade level of knowledge of how to adopt those skills. And it's because they got to be there testing.
I mean, teachers, even administrators could do that like they did in the past. Nothing's perfect. But again, now we don't have actual people, I think, talking about what needs to be done. That's the racket in my view. When you were talking about an argument a moment ago, we should have ideological arguments there, you know, that's how, right? That's the compromise. All right. You're right winger. You like private. So, okay, let's do what can be done privately, logically, privately. Fine. You'll be happy. But I come again and explain places where private can just not work by definition. And capitalism has actually used a lot of public sector, public taxes. Actually, all our technology is what over 90% is all American socialism, if you will. Yeah. The internet, the computers, the weapons, all government based, public school, Natural Science Foundation, all of that stuff. That argument is not taking place. I think I think too often in government, structures, and the higher, the worst, I'm sure, because the concentration of power gets higher. It's my donors with their individual private interests. Want me to say this. So the compromise is between lobbyists, essentially, or between those they represent. I'm very acutely, and actually it's hard to teach these days because you have to repeat it all the time. Of course, my beef with the government is not protecting me from the powerful, because that's the role of government in a market/capitalist system, to protect me, to go hunt the overpowerful and break them down, to foster competition. And that's what's all but dead.
Well, why don't we put a cap on lobbyists on how much they can make, and they can only earn as much as their state's school teachers do.
That's a bit too gentle and humane for my taste, but I could go with that. No, but yeah, right. I mean, but how could you get that done given that, like you were also saying before, right? Imagine anybody who has what courage you must have as a politician to stand against the oil companies, because that's, of course.
Well, yeah, and Senator Soto has, and I can't say that he's very well respected in Tallahassee. I mean, it does come down to control of whether your bill is going to be heard in committee or not.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have on the flip side, when you have these bills that are introduced now, that, you know, that even taking consideration that it supersedes how much traffic can go. I mean, that's really kind of scary. If you're fracking, and you have this bill that says that the transportation is even excluded for, you know, so you can live in a rural area and you enjoy a quiet life, and because this bill supersedes any local authority, that they can have 200 trucks rumbling down there, with fracking fluid. I mean, that's pretty scary.
And that's not left, right. This is
that's all of us. That's all of us, because we're all drinking the same water and we're all breathing the same air.
In fact, you can easily articulate a position from either kind of, or you know, ideological position that would lead you to the kind of the same conclusion.
Well,
makes it like so surprisingly, this should be a non-issue.
Well, because it's not ideological. It's the, ideas of
that much
not
money.
Yeah.
But you know, but there's a great petition right now for solar choice. that's going on. And those are some strange bedfellows right there. It is the Tea Partiers because they're feeling that the utility companies, the utility monopoly, are telling them that they can't have solar power on their commercial roofs and be sold that back to them. So when you have environmentalists and you have the Tea Partiers and the liberals and stuff, and they're all together on this, I think that when you see something like that succeed, then and the world didn't fall apart because everybody communicated and looked out for what's best. I think then you're going to see other things that, hey, we can tackle the fracking thing. We can tackle the TPP. There's only so much that by human nature that people will get kicked in their teeth and then don't want to do it anymore, that they feel defeated. And I feel like right now that's why people don't vote as much, that they feel like they're helpless. And so if you're a person in power or you're a corporation in power and you make people unhealthy, unwilling, uneducated, and not having the energy to fight, then it's really, really easy to control any society, no matter left or right. So
let me ask you something to be fair. Where is Governor Scott, whatever his name is, on this issue?
He has sided with the utility companies 100%.
Okay.
He was given an environmental, he was given an environmental award the other day, and it was, Scott Maxwell.
I don't understand that.
Scott Maxwell, I think, was the one that wrote this story, or was it Beth, it just tore it apart, you know? I mean, it was like, you know.
And that's part of the problem.
The witch giving the apple, you know?
Anytime some make-believe person, like, the governor here, as far as politics or policy, it does something very minimal, a whole bunch of people come on and go like, oh, amazing, let's give him an award. And then the perception of those of us who can't turn on the TV or the radio to be more informed is like, oh, he's really doing something, let me vote for him.
Well, that one kind of really did blow up in his face, though, because even the people that kind of side with him, they weren't believing it. And, you know, a friend of mine, Chris, sent me a quote the other day, and everything that we've been talking about today, I thought it was really appropriate that there are two primary choices in life: to accept the conditions as they exist, or accept the responsibility for changing them. And I think that says it right there. Just like when people don't vote, and then you're not supposed to complain. But if you
I'm not.
George Carlin has an excellent bit.
I'm not by, but don't participate. Vote. I'm not. The voting has become a charade, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you vote. Or maybe if you vote third party, vote Green Party. Yeah, that I respect. Though I understand that you need people to, you know, you need to do good work within the system. It's solidarity, you know. I think nobody alone can pull it off. Then
when we do the lake cleanups, I can get with the help of Eco Action and ideas and other people and getting out there and getting my hands dirty personally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you can get 10 volunteers, and then the next time we had 30. And we didn't pull out 10 bags of garbage. We pulled out of just La Costa Wetlands last Saturday, a 40-yard construction container full.
Wow.
Full. Now, so I kind of stand by that, but that if you wait for somebody else to do it, or you wait for things to get better, you've got to go out there and do it yourself, and you've got to teach by experience. If you tell people, we can sit and talk about this all day, but unless there's a call to action, if there's not a way that you can show up and actually clean up a lake or clean up politics or clean up Tallahassee or prevent fracking, whatever it is, you have to participate in it.
Yeah, everybody in their own niche and the difference is
and be productive and then confront when there's that person that stands up and, oh, I can't work with that person because of blah, 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 blah. You know, you have to confront it. We have to shut down this divisiveness, just like turning off the TV and getting rid of the cable. I mean, we've gotten rid of cable. We haven't shut off the TV completely yet, but it's like when
no,
I do,
TV.
when I do start to have these conversations with people, it's like, whoa, yeah. where are you guys at? Because you're filled with so much fear. But the same thing I've been experiencing the last couple of years, trying to bring these groups that are all over and they're doing similar initiatives. They just don't know each other yet. And then once we've met, bam, like the amount of work that's getting done has been beautiful to watch. And it is here. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of great work. So we can do a lot if we could just stop talking about what the media wants us to talk about and fight about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but of course, yeah, it's difficult, but you know, changes in the world have been difficult always. It takes a long time, right? I mean, it took them many, many decades to get rid of the French monarchy in the 18th century, et cetera, et cetera.
Would you touch on Soto's bill one more time to, you know?
Sure, sure. Mm. And you know, and I can, really appreciate
so give that. Give us the important info.
Okay. I really appreciate that a lot of people don't have time and you know, have a couple of kids or you're caring for an elderly parent or something like that. You can still pick up the phone and it is really important to call and or write a letter, actually handwrite a letter, send an email to your representatives. I would urge everybody out there to support Senator Darren Soto's bill 166 to ban fracking in Florida. And that also addresses both the hydraulic fracturing and the acidification fracking. And then absolutely oppose, Senator Richter's bill and, Representative Rodriguez's bill, which is House Bill 119. They're bad bills. Call your Orange County government and say that you want an ordinance in place to protect our livelihood and our county from fracking.
So that's Mayor Teresa Jacobs.
Commissioner Siplin might be yours. I called Commissioner Pete Clark that is going to help write this.
And I hate to muddy the waters, but the solar panel or the solar energy petition you were talking about, there are two of them going around right now.
Yes, and you know what? Chris Castro explains it really, really well. The Citizens for Solar Choice, that is the good one. The other one, I can't remember the name of it right offhand, but the other one's bad.
Duke wrote it in Florida
Power.
Oh,
right. They
last minute listener. So you might get a chance to use our Florida sun a little bit more. Well,
yes, we have a listener.
Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, my concern was, you know, I don't know if this is correct or not, but I heard that, you know, fracking is really not the cheapest way to extract oil. It was profitable when oil was way up, you know, $80-$100 a barrel or whatever. And when it gets down to a certain price, then fracking just doesn't make sense. So I'm just worried that, you know, to make fracking work, because they're going to artificially inflate the market to keep oil prices high. Because right now it's cheap. So that's
an interesting
idea. Well, that's even another scary component. You know, I don't know. All we have to do is have one more, you know, Middle East unrest and then they jack up the prices. So I can't really speculate on that. I know if you, like Carolina was saying, if you're spending money on Super Bowl ads saying, yeah, we need to frack, and you're doing it in a state with as many people and, with as many, tourist dollars that come into the state, they've got to know something or they just want to stake their claim.
That's been my concern because, you know, with TPP, they've been working on this since 2004. So they wanted this passed quietly and they wanted it passed quietly a few years ago when everything was high. And so I think they would have had the argument to push it through. And my concern was, hey, we've got all this money invested in starting this infrastructure. We've got half of it built. Well, the energy, and then bam, it's too big to fail, and we need another bailout. Mm-hmm. You know, you just never know
and
because
you know,
any way they can get their hands on the public money, it just seems
it's
like
it's about control. I like the way you actually say it as a stakeholder. You know, I mean, maybe they end up really not needing to frack here, but they'll you know, it opens the door, it creates the structures where they could do anything they want and dismantle all the protections and kind of things that are supposed to balance it out. But I want to point out that fracking was pretty doubtful I'm being gentle here, wasn't even cost effective in whatever the price is. It's a really awful gasoline, and it creates tremendous amount of externalities that are not counted properly. So we don't get a realistic price that would allow any kind of market. Again, I'm being like all right wing today. I don't know. Because this is not even capitalism. That's my point. This is not a hardcore right capitalism. This is a racket. This is how the world looked before capitalism.
And when they introduced it, clean energy, doesn't that sound great?
Right.
But the process to even liquefy the gas is dirtier than coal.
Yeah.
So, you know, to liquefy it, to export it through these pipes.
Particularly
And then we haven't even talked about the pipe bust and the old oil lines that were happening a couple years ago in Oklahoma. And all of a sudden in your neighborhood, you're not even on the coast by a port or by an oil well.
And if you want to speak to a real global, it's global climate change. We're all still talking about fossil fuels. Right. They're all still fossil fuels. And there's a climate change march on October 14th in downtown. It's going to start at Marco Rubio's office and go to Lake Eola.
Trying to go back to the 90s and do him over again or something. Or maybe the 70s, whatever you want. But this is a really very profoundly worrying thing. You look at history, societies that looked back to capture past glories were doomed without exception. Mm. It's time.
Yeah, at that time.
We'll have to come again anytime, and let's do it again.
Thank you very much.
It was really fun.
Updates
and an honor.
All right. So,
a lot here.
Remember that we do have a website called punkonomics.org. We usually post this very same program if you missed some of it, or all of it for all that matter.
Yeah, stuff as best we can.
Yeah, exactly. And just a reminder that all the opinions stated here today are solely ours, not of Violence College or the staff at WPRK, and remember, we are right. And a reminder that the Organic Catnip Show is on the air every Friday after midnight. So for all of you who like to leave the clubs early, you know who to tune in. Mr. Catnip and Fox Force 5 on the Organic Catnip Show here on WPRK. See you again next week. Sayonara.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed. I know we go all over the place. It's supposed to be like we would be sitting in my house.